This is social commerce not yet taking off like Farmville. And if you're not intending to be in the session, please exit the airplane now. So I'm Greg Sterling. I'm an analyst and blogger, consultant. I cover location-based services, mobile, social, the space that's now obnoxiously being called Solo-mo. And I'm the moderator of the session, and my esteemed guests will and panelists, co-panelists, will introduce themselves. I need to clarify that Facebook was supposed to be here, and Walmart also was supposed to be here, but we have a better speaker than Walmart, QVC. But Facebook isn't here because of their quiet period, so they yanked their speaker because of the impending IPO, which is unfortunate, but we will still have an excellent discussion, and we want your participation. There's a mic in the center of the room, and after a certain kind of foundational set of questions and answers, we'll open it up to you guys. But first, the panelists should introduce themselves, and as you do, just talk a little bit about how your businesses are social or where social plays in your organization.
Do you want to start?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for making it to our session. It's been a long slog. I know, I feel it myself. My name is Tara Hunt. I am the CEO and co-founder of Biosphere, BUYosphere.com. My company is all about helping people find what they're looking for when they don't really know where to start. So everybody here know Quora? That's our elevator pitch for Quora for shopping. So we're a shopping Q&A site where if you're looking for something in particular, some recent searches, turquoise wedges, shoes to go with this dress, something to wear to my cousin's wedding, the perfect gift for Valentine's Day for the woman who has everything, those sort of questions where no Google search will help you find it, but other human beings may have a bit of a clue into that, especially if they've discovered that themselves. So we basically crowdsource the answer for you, and people answer with product links, and those product links are parsed with images and stuff. So quite a convenient way to shop.
Hi, I'm Peter Farrell. I'm Director of Brand Marketing and Social at QVC. For those that don't know, we're a global shopping community. We are here in the U.S., Italy, U.K., Germany, and Japan, and continue to expand. We consider ourselves to have been sort of in the social space for about 25 years. We, from the beginning, our format, long-form presentation, was based on telling stories and trying to connect the sort of owners, inventors, dreamers of the products that we sell to the audience out there. And today, of course, we've evolved from back then it was snail mail, and then there was testimonial calls that could come in. And today we have over 22 ways in which we can engage with folks and vice versa. We're on all the usual suspects in terms of the platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Tumblr. We've been experimenting with TV check-in sites like Miso and GetGlue. One advantage we have is we also have a big host team, about 28 hosts, on-air personalities that drive a lot of affinity for the brand. And we'll talk a bit more about that later, but so that's where we are.
My name is Craig Donato. I'm the founder of Oodle. And Oodle, we've been working on social commerce for at least 3 or 4 years, really a long time. You might know us because we run and operate the marketplace application on Facebook, which is a very social version of Craigslist, if you will. It's almost the antithesis of them. Rather than being revolving around anonymity, you can always see how you're connected to the other party, right? Whether they're a friend of a neighbor or a friend of a coworker, which really kind of puts the community back into a local marketplace.
So if I were to ask people in the audience to define social commerce, do you think you could do it? How many people think they could define what social commerce is? That's why you're all here, right? It's a very hard problem. I think when you sit down and you start thinking about it and you start talking about it, what is social commerce? It starts to become very elusive. And that's the first question I'm going to ask each of these panelists to weigh in on. How would you define, just so we can put some stakes in the ground, social commerce? Jump in, anybody?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think one of the ways that I like to define it is almost defining it against the current state of e-commerce, which is very, very, very search-driven, right? So if we think about the experience you have on Amazon, you show up with intent. I know what I want to buy, and they make buying very, very easy. So it's about creating buying utility. I think a key part of social is thinking about an experience that's more entertainment-driven and more of a destination. So rather than a buying utility, kind of an entertainment destination, it's more of a fun kind of interactive place built around serendipity, not hunting for something specific. So that's kind of one dimension to it. The second is when you are looking for something, rather than it being, again, the search metaphor based on information, I'm hunting, looking for facts and information, there's more of an element of social discovery, and Tara, you're better to speak to this, which is that I'm finding out about what to buy or how to buy based on trusted input from people I know or somehow people that I trust. And I'd say those are, for me, the two core components. It's not about putting an intent-based store on a Facebook page, right? That's not what it is. That happens to be in a social network, but that's not social commerce.
Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of people, we post paste the term social in front of a lot of things, mm-hmm. and we think that magically makes everything social, right? So yeah, you put your store on Facebook, and then it's social, or you just add Facebook likes or connect or pin this or whatever, and then you've got a social store. But I really think I'm an old school social person. I was on early IRC. I had GeoCities sites. Like for me, I've been part of the social web before it was named the social web. And I think we're social beings in general. And the promise of social as it is today, and this is actually something Craig told me a while back, is that it's going to make our lives easier. And how it makes our lives easier is, you know, the trust element comes into play then. When it makes it easier for us to make decisions based on, oh, okay, so if so-and-so has bought that and enjoyed it and I trust so-and-so that they're not some sort of robot or somebody paid by the organization, then I can buy it too. And then help us also discover cool new stuff because, you know, we know our friends and people that have like interests in our networks actually really enhance our discovery mechanisms. The first time I saw a Cambridge bachel, you know, that was through somebody's Facebook post of discovering the Cambridge satchel. But many merchants, I think the issue here is that many merchants think of social commerce as yet another marketing channel. And this is, you know, what really, you know, it's not that it's bad that it's a marketing channel. I understand that. I have a business. I want to help small businesses. I want to help merchants reach customers at that point of, like, I'm looking for that something. But like anything that we're naming for to be like a marketing phenomena, we have to stop doing that and realize that social is really at the end of the day like a core human need. That's why people are connecting on these networks. That's why people are spending way too much of our free time with our faces and our phones and pinning things and Instagramming every moment of our lives and doing this stuff because we really want to connect with others and to throw basically a shopping mall in the middle of that is not exactly doesn't exactly fit very well.
Yeah, I guess from where I'm sitting, and particularly with the type of audience that we have who are predominantly passionate shoppers, these folks...
And predominantly women, right?
And predominantly women, yes. These folks view shopping as a way of engaging with the world. They always have, before this whole thing, you know, social marketing became a thing. And so it's not just about buying products for them. It is literally about sharing stories of their lives and so on and so forth. And today, so simply, there are all these other means to do it. So I kind of come from the space that shopping has always inherently been social, to obviously even down to needing certain supplies for your household. And I think the big question for us is, You know, as marketing has shifted, how do we get with sort of with the program and get a bit more human about what our brands are doing with our customers out there in the world? That's my view on it.
So if I were to ask the audience, you know, Zynga, which is in the panel description, has been very successful, obviously, on Facebook, kind of an unprecedented success in a way. And people buy, you know, credits for advancement in the different games on Facebook. And, you know, you could say, well, that's a kind of social commerce. You're on Facebook, you're buying something, you're playing with, you're interacting with other people. How many people would agree that that is that example is social commerce? Just a few. So most people don't think it's social commerce. One of the things that this, the title of this panel sort of suggests is what's gone on with the Facebook stores. You know, there were all these retailers who rushed into Facebook and assumed, like I think a lot of people, that Facebook was going to be this great platform for selling a lot of stuff. But that hasn't happened, and in fact, JCPenney and The Gap and Nordstrom and others are, after about a year, shutting down their Facebook stores. And it hasn't happened across the board, but it's sort of a mini trend. And so let's sort of diagnose for a moment, why hasn't e-commerce, social commerce, in a narrow sense, worked on Facebook as it's presently constituted? Anybody jump in?
So this sort of goes back to what I was saying a little bit earlier around like my definition of social commerce and why it doesn't really fit really well. I don't know if you guys remember when Second Life, you know, was going to be the next place that all the stores moved into, right? I remember every store going and like buying up islands to, you know, I think even, you know, Walmart, who was originally supposed to be on this this panel, had bought a huge Walmart island, and this was going to be the revolution in e-commerce, that people were going to fly their naked avatars over to the Walmart island and buy, you know, their household supplies. And it obviously didn't happen, and it actually kind of ruined Second Life. Actually, it really ruined Second Life. It ruined that sort of utopic, crazy stuff that was organically happening on Second Life, and it instead just made it a not so abandon-free social place to be. All of a sudden, you were being marketed to everywhere you went. This was a world you could escape into and not see billboards and not see advertisements all the time, and then all of a sudden, they followed people there. And then, you know, Facebook stores, I think, you know, for me, I think the community just rejected it, you know, outright, and Facebook recognizes that any sort of invasion by these this level of commerce becomes just once again, you're chatting with a friend. It's just imagine like chatting with a friend over a coffee and like an ad dropping down between you. Here, take this next 5 seconds and get another free coffee in the middle of your conversation. That's just what it feels like on these sites. And then, you know, Pinterest, I'm already watching this. Like you'd go to Pinterest even 6 months ago, and there were, you know, just every page you went to was full of beautiful images and great conversations and lots of love and interesting, like, and it didn't matter where the images were coming from and whether they were stolen or whatever it was. It was just a beautiful site to just discover around. And now my feed, like, is about a quarter, I think, marketing stuff. So whether people are pushing their own interests or pushing their own products or, you know, some, you know, there is definitely this huge boom. Every second article I'm reading is how marketers could use Facebook or Pinterest to drive traffic to their stores. And I'm just like, this the monetization of this, the invasion of the commerce is going to ruin that beautiful social sphere. And I have the hope that we can actually marry the two in a meaningful way and help everybody out and keep the social lovely.
So let me interject. How many Pinterest users in the room? So quite a few. Hitwise just said, I think, you know, a couple of days ago, that there are now like 100 million visits to Pinterest. I mean, it's a massive, massive site. I saw another data point that it was a bigger referrer than Twitter now to many sites. So you know, I don't know, Tara, if you're...
No, that was okay. My rant.
Let me just do this. So I think that there's two reasons why it hasn't taken off on Facebook. The first is one we mentioned before, which is that you're taking an intent-based search experience like a store and sticking it in Facebook, which is really more like TV than search, right? People tune in to be entertained. So I don't know why people would think that would work anyway, but it hasn't. The second, I think, which is a little bit more of a subtle point, is that I think friends are necessary but not sufficient for success with commerce, right? They're helpful, but really for a lot of commerce decisions, you need to find like-minded people. I don't really care what my mom thinks about certain things that I want to buy, right? So my mom's kind of my friend on Facebook, I'll admit that. But in any case, friends are okay, but you really need to build an interest graph around a lot of shopping. And I think one of the things that Pinterest has done a good job of is leveraging the Facebook graph to fuel an interest graph around different boards. And I think that's a key component of it. I mean, everyone needs to think about building their own graph around the type of shopping or commerce experience they want to create, and people are just starting to do that.
There have been some successes on Facebook, just to sort of throw in the other point of view, which is a lot of the kind of couponing, which has now been formalized in coupon ads, has been successful, where people are sharing, you know, deals from Macy's or yep. Starbucks or whatever, and those have been very viral and resulted in a lot of foot traffic into physical stores. So that has been a successful thing, and Facebook is now monetizing that where they weren't before. But the store concept seems to have failed, at least for now.
I would say it's because by sharing something, a big good deal you just had, actually makes you more popular with your friends. So it still comes back to the deep social component, like what's in it for me as a user?
I think from you know, our perspective, we certainly tried a bunch of different things. We from the beginning chose not to do the full, you know, offer your full store catalog there, and instead focused on doing what we've always done, which is to share more stories around the very products and the people who make those stories, stuff that's interesting. You know, we did a lot of tabs. We wasted a lot of time, although at the time we were experimenting, and I think that's part of it. You know, all of us have spent a fair amount of time trying to figure out this new thing. In the last couple of days, my mind is blown. I'm convinced social will work, but in any case, we focused on those stories, getting experts up there, because to Craig's point, you know, if I'm out there going to buy a new keyboard because I play a lot of music, I don't care what my friends have to say. I want to hear from another professional musician out there. We also have hosts, and they are very active, and our customer base is really interested in what they have to say. They build affinity through the broadcast network and in 90 million homes every day, and certain of these hosts are very knowledgeable about electronics, others about beauty, and they create followings themselves. And in the real world today, we all do it on Twitter, where they've been doing it forever. So we've actually seen, I'd like to be the odd man out here, some success here. And just to illustrate a small point, I mean, even what we're doing from Facebook alone, we're starting to see conversion rates that are approaching that of our .com site. This is, you know, within the last year.
What does that mean when you say conversion, specifically?
Specifically sales. So out of all the sessions that we're driving, correct.
Okay.
Out of all those sessions, we're now about 4.3%, which is not too shabby, and our site's mid-fives. We've been at this 2 years. QVC.com's first year of sales was 2.7 million. Ours was 2.2 with a 7-day window. So we are seeing that if we stick to sort of our brand purpose, why we're out there, and we're not there just for products, like I'm saying, if we stick to that, we're seeing more success. When we start to just shove stuff in folks' faces, it plain out doesn't work.
So Peter's talking about an example of success on Facebook. Do you guys have other examples of success, your own or third-party success that you've observed in what you would describe as social commerce? Can you point to specific things that are real models for success? It's okay to say no.
I'll let you think. I'll throw out two. So one has been, this is kind of more of a tactical success, but we've spent a lot of time thinking about how now there's really two giant funnels of traffic on the internet. There's the search traffic, which is Google, and then there's Facebook. And thinking about each of those funnels as entirely different things, right? And how does one optimize? We spend so much time optimizing for SEO. We know how to do that. But how do we optimize for a search funnel? And little things like, for example, when we're sharing something that someone's selling or sharing something that someone's wants to buy, as not just sharing the fact, which is like this search DNA, but the story. Why are you buying it, right? I bought the blender not because I'm buying a blender, but because I'm going on a diet, right? That kind of stuff massively increases conversion. So it's this art of storytelling that's fundamental to the essence of that stuff. And that's been very effective. The other thing that we've seen is, independent of where the sharing is created, as people share with their friends specifically, for example, say they share something on Oodle.com, we want to keep them on Facebook, where they're in a mindset. We get four times the conversion, so we'll get 4x better conversion from the news feed on Facebook if we can keep them in the Facebook Chrome rather than popping them out to another site because they're in a different mindset. So, I mean, just by spending time and recognizing that it's a very different funnel with very different characteristics, it's people are more in this serendipitous browse experience, we've been able to really tune what we do. So that's probably the biggest thing we've done.
So Tara, from your point of view, what's the best example of social commerce as you understand it on the online or anywhere digital?
So I have a couple of examples of stores that I love that are leveraging social in a different way than we think of social. So a lot of people think of social, oh, people shopping together and making decisions together and da-da-da. But I think who here's heard of ModCloth? Yeah. So the Be the Buyer part of their site. So they actually get input from their users, their customers on what they should be buying. So all of the stuff that they're sourcing, they're finding, they're like, so they do the first initial curation. You know, these are 100 cute dresses that we think we're going to add to our product catalog. You come vote, and then they'll pick the 10 that they'll buy, and they'll put on the site based on the community, their community voting. And I think it's really cool because you feel an ownership as a customer. You also get a sneak peek, and I've seen actual campaigns for dresses that were falling behind. So it drives some marketing traffic to them, and then at the end of the day, they pretty much know what they can sell once they actually buy it. So it's really innovative, and it's fun, and it's engaging. Another one, fab.com. I wouldn't have originally said it was social because it was like the shopping club, the flash sales site or whatever. But then they added some really cool social elements to Fab where you could start to save products that you like and share them with your friends. They created almost like a Pinterest that's specific for Fab on their site. And you know, people will spend hours and hours getting lost in like products there, and they're now using the products that people like the most to create their future sales. So, oh, this has been really popular. People are really sad they missed a sale. Okay, we're going to bring these products back. So they're actually feeding that feedback, the social feedback, back into their catalog, into what they're offering their customers. And one oldie but goodie, I don't know if you guys have heard of John Fluvog shoes, anybody here? Okay, if you haven't heard of Fluvogs, they're probably, I think, the coolest shoes in the world. They're a Canadian company. And they, before social commerce was ever social commerce, before the social web was a social web and anybody was uttering Web 2.0, they created an open source footwear program where they would invite people to submit their funky shoe designs and have the community vote on it. And they would actually produce the shoe named after the designer, give the designer money. This was even before Threadless. And they're still doing that to this day. And they actually have 4 or 5 shoes that they choose in their line.
What's the URL?
fluevog.com.
Okay.
Yeah. I always get the U and E mixed up. But it's a really cool story. And because it's so old, you know, before all this, and they didn't really think of themselves as innovative, they just knew they had people that loved their design so much and were inspired by them and were designing shoes. I think it came from the story I hear, is it came out of people sending in sketches and saying, I want to be a Fluvog designer, that they thought, well, okay, let's do this. Let's make this happen for people.
So I want to just interject. Craig's eager to say something. I want to interject one thing. There's a common thread running through all those examples that you gave, which is about the community's input into inventory or into product choices. It's not about using people to spread purchase behavior after the fact. It's on the front end, if I can use that description. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's making the product better. It's using customers to make, not using customers, involving customers and making the product better for the customers. And I'm really inspired by that.
So I was going to basically summarize what you said, which is that what's interesting is that when you think about social commerce as a destination-driven experience and an entertainment experience, the people that do that best are the boutiques, right? The difference here is what Tara's saying, which is that the merchandising is done, the curation is done by your community, right? So the people that are most impacted by this social commerce stuff is actually the merchandisers and the buyers, not so much the front-end marketing people, right? And that's kind of the core essence of the shift that's happening.
Yeah. But there's this great offshoot of marketing then that happens, right? Then that, it spins off and it has this beautiful advantage to it, right? So people are posting it to Facebook, help my dress win. You know, that drives a lot of traffic back to ModCloth.
You know, and I heard, I was at a conference recently, and this guy stood up, and I can't think of his name, and he asked the audience, you know, who do you guys think is doing really, really well in social? And, you know, a bunch of folks started answering the question. It was sort of the usual suspects, and he then kind of came out with the obvious. And so as I look around the room, I think there is one company that's probably doing social commerce, but in a different way, better than anybody on the planet. And just about every single one of you in here right now, as I'm looking at it, has one of them in your hands. Mm. And those guys don't even have a site that's officially run by them, a Facebook site, or anything that I know of. And that just sort of stunned me when I heard that fact. And of course, it's Apple, not to pick on them, but it's amazing. We all have them. We all talk about them, and we use them every day, and we share with them. So, storytelling to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're actually a company that's even more interesting in that fact because they are traditionally very not social, very antisocial on so many levels. Like, they don't tweet and they don't blog and they are not allowed to talk to anybody about what they're doing and feedback into what they're producing.
And they don't really care what you think.
Yeah, I don't care what you think exactly.
The one exception to that is the recent sort of controversy over working conditions in China. I think they've been responsive to that, and there's been kind of a groundswell of
Well,
opposition.
And they did change the body of the Max a couple of years back to recycled aluminum.
Right.
And so that was almost...
So let me pose another question, then we'll open it up to audience questions. So one of the things that I'm sort of inferring from this discussion is that it's very hard, and Peter, you may be the exception to this or one of the few exceptions, it's very hard to get in between, to exploit social in a very conscious or manipulative way to sell stuff. That it may not be possible to sort of force social in the way that some marketers are doing onto their their customers or their would-be customers. Can you guys comment on that? I mean, sort of injecting yourself as a marketer into the social stream, is that not possible fundamentally?
I think it's tough. And the irony is, look, hey, I work for QVC, so lots of folks out there have a very different point of view about what we represent. There's TV shopping stigma, and folks think, you know, can look at us and say we're hard sell, you know, Jinsu knives and jewelry and stuff. We do so much more. So it's kind of a funny question to throw to me. But the truth is that, you cannot manufacture an affinity or a connection with human beings. You really can't. That's sustainable. So if I look at our business, 95% of our revenues are coming from repeat business. 95%. Most retailers would love that. You can't BS your way into that sort of thing. Not with a customer base of 7.5 million people and expanding around the world. So I think you have to be absolutely genuine. It's about storytelling. It's about celebrating those that try to take, you know, problems out of people's lives by introducing innovation. And to Craig's point, it's not about, you know, getting, in this case, a Keurig or getting a grill. It's because someone gets inspired that maybe with a grill I can go camping or something, you know, and do something they've never done before. So it's about ideas for everyday life. And when we are up there, measuring, we measure our business results dollars per minute. So we know New York, I mean, America's voting with their wallet every single day. And if we're not doing something compelling, we see it right in the moment. The sales go down. And she will tell us every time when we're hard selling or being too shrill. We have one of the most active communities on QVC.com. And folks are very vocal, and we listen to it every single day. And we've been doing that for 25 years in various forms. And we're not always perfect.
I would say that a lot of, and I like, you know, what Peter has to say, and the attitude of QVC probably goes a long ways to building that community, but so many companies out there think it's about them. They think their customers are theirs, and they're going to create loyalty, and they're going to capture customers, and that their customers are going to want to see them every day. And what they fail to recognize, which is really silly, because everybody at that works at a company is also a customer. And if you thought about your own shopping patterns, is like we're busy, we're distracted. There's a million shiny objects out there. We have real lives, real problems. I could give a damn what's coming through those daily email deals every day. So what's in it for me? And that's what a company that does really well is like, how can I help my customer achieve what they need to achieve, get to that next level, do what they need to do? I think, you know, your example with the camping grill and stuff, you know, connect with other people, make their lives, enhance their lives in any way, shape, or form. Then the customer is going to want to join in that conversation. But anything else is noise.
What does that mean as a practical matter? I mean, those are very nice sort of,
so,
sort of, you know, one hears these kinds of things all the time,
right.
and I think essentially the attitude is right. But as a practical, if you're sort of a consultant for somebody who's trying to set up a social commerce program, how do you translate that sort of very broad utopian thinking into very tactical and practical terms? What should they do? What should they not do?
Well, I mean, it's the first thing that comes to mind, because I went to their presentation the other day. Barclay MasterCard is coming out with a new program. I don't know if you guys have seen this. This is pretty amazing. They're coming out with like a community-based credit card that has like a low interest rate. And the reason it has a low interest rate is because they're leveraging social, and you're part of a social network, social graph that your friends all pay on time, and everybody like is a good citizen of the credit card, and the credit card stays at a low rate, and that you sort of get communities around your rate and that sort of thing. And I guess what they're doing is pretty brilliant, because they've tapped into like a need for their customers against their own economic interest. So if you think about it, if this works, if people get this credit card and the rates go down and there's all this transparency into your bills and whatever else that is going on, they're going to disrupt their own industry, and they can no longer charge us the 18 to 24%.
But presumably they create loyalty and long-term lifetime value and all of that.
No, absolutely. It's an advantage, and it's a first mover advantage, but they're also disrupting, and they're going to compete with their own products. So against really their own economic interests, why do they have to do this? Well, maybe you could argue that they're doing it because they're going to be ahead of the other companies that could trump them. But, you know, if you think about it, what's the incentive for any of these credit card companies to ever give us something that benefits our lives? And in that way, I think they're going to also capture hearts and minds.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, Craig, the same question, since you said you didn't want to say anything, which is as you sit here as a consultant to a big retailer, national or international retailer, trying to formulate an effective social strategy, what do you tell them as a practical matter that they should be doing or not doing?
I think the mistake that people make is trying to duct tape on social to an existing commerce play, right? So if all you're doing is adding a share button to the back end of an intent-based experience, it's going to be a fail, right? And I think we've seen loud and clear that you can duct tape stuff onto an existing commerce experience or take a traditional commerce experience and stick it into Facebook, and both those things fail. Like, I think that's definitively fail, right? I think the trick now is, how do we think about creating a different experience. I mean, shopping's always been social, right? You always go to the mall, you kick out with your friends, you go to a store, you window shop. You can't window shop on Amazon. You just can't do it, right? I mean, so how do we create... I would challenge people to think and use their EQ to think about what type of social commerce experience they want to create. And again, back to making it a destination where the merchandise is actually curated with participating with your audience. And then also it's all about these shared stories. And I know it sounds trite, but man, I mean, you got to get people telling stories. That's what's emotional, right? I mean, we think about... just there's kind of these prototypical stories that you want people to create. One is, this is me. This is who I am. I bought this product because this reflects who I am as a person, right? You got another one, which is the FOMO one, fear of missing out. People want to share because they don't want to miss out on stuff, right? You want to tap into that kind of juice. And then you've got another one, which is people just trying to help each other out, right? We all want to help each other out. And those are core human emotions, and those are core parts of the storytelling experience that you want to put around your commerce experience. And that's very different than searching for the best toothbrush on Amazon.com, right? Yeah. And you can't, they're just different things. And I would just say, sorry for the long monologue, but I'd say start from scratch. Like, don't try to duct tape this stuff on.
Yeah. Okay, so time for you guys to ask questions if you have one or many.
Hey, my name is Brendan Moore. I work at Front Gate Tickets here in town. Some of the arguments on why social commerce is not working is because users don't want another place where they have to put in their credit card information, accept another site's terms of use, where they can go to a site like Amazon or iTunes where they already have an account. One click, you buy it. You don't have to worry about trusting another company. First question is, do you think Facebook will eventually push more companies towards using Facebook credits if they're going to have a commerce store similar to how they've done with Zynga? Second question is, do you think that if they do push it towards Facebook credits, is that going to increase conversion rate and usage from users by making the process more seamless?
I guess I would challenge the fundamental question, right? So I would say that Amazon is a great utility for buying things, and no one's going to disrupt that. If you just want to buy something, you know what you want to buy, that's what it's about, right? And if you think about the social or the e-commerce funnel, right, there's how does one find out about something? How does one go through the consideration process of figuring out what to buy, right? So it's awareness, consideration, then there's actually the close of the purchase, right? The things that social does is actually feed the top of the funnel, right? It's how do you create awareness of what to buy through social discovery, through serendipity? It's figuring out by learning your friends. So rather than researching 1,000 reviews on Amazon to figure out what to buy, I just ask my friends, right? So it compresses the time to consideration. That's where commerce is disruptive. I think at the bottom end of the funnel, which is about credit cards and formats, that's where a lot of social commerce activity has been right now, and that's not worked, right? I think that's the wrong end. So I would say, you know, again, that the cool stuff, the juice is at the top of the funnel, not at the bottom of the funnel.
Well, if you say that credit cards and the credits aren't working, Zynga is a very profitable company based on the Facebook credits. So I'm trying to figure out if that's like the gamification of it.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do. I'm just saying I don't think it's the missing ingredient. I think if you solve it, that's not what's stopping this stuff from taking
off.
But I
would add that frictionless or reducing friction on any interaction, on any transaction will increase conversion. Absolutely. But when you reduce friction, you also, like when you, if you tap into like an Amazon or a iTunes store or Facebook credits, you also then, you've reduced friction, but you've lost a connection with your customer too. So is it more important to get deep, you know, to get, you know, more of an interaction or a transaction with your customers, right? So on Facebook, credits, you got transact. Yeah, it would be great to get both.
Yeah.
But when you're using a third party like that reduces friction, you get transaction, not necessarily interaction.
Thank you.
It seems like a lot of the conversion points of social commerce is very discount oriented, whether it's like Groupon or something like that. And it seems like we're conditioning a whole consumer base to expect a deal every time they shop, which is not a good deal for the retailer. It's not a good deal for the manufacturer. Do you have any examples of use of social commerce or social media where you're taking the price where that's not the key factor, where instead you're building the experience, you're building, you know, the sense of brand, as an example, moving away from having to deeply discount, especially the Groupon effect is really local business owners. I know I've talked to them. They hate it because it's like they don't see the payoff for it.
Yes, we don't do that. QVC has been learned early on not to get into the artificial stimulant of any kind, because you're right, it kills business, and it's happening all over the place. So the big question is whether a lot of these sites that are getting a lot of headlines and out, you know, are they going to still be around? Is a good question. We focus on the value, and we do focus absolutely on the experience. And we have to, because, you know, if we don't do our job right, our returns go through the roof. So we focus very much on the connection factor, enhancing the stories, and what is the underlying value. And by that, I mean, because that sometimes sounds like a cop-out from a retailer, but look, the fact is, you go into electronics category, as an example, you as a woman, and we get this through research, you can go into Best Buy, and, you know, half the folks there that are, and I love Best Buy, so this is not a diss on them, but a lot of the sales folks have no emotional understanding of what our, at least our audience's underlining needs are. It's not just about the laptop, right? There's a reason why she's there. We're able to get at that, and we're able to explain precisely why we have configured a certain bundle. This is where we get the value. We go out and we buy deep for a 24-hour period on a lot of items where the value is coming. That's how we can be competitive. But fundamentally, it's about understanding that need, which to me kind of goes back to marketing 101 on a level. Hand that over to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say that people obviously are highly incented to share deals, right? It's an emotional thing. But I would say if you buy off on this idea that the real sweet spot for social commerce is where it's not about creating buying utility, it's about creating a destination that's more around window shopping and entertainment, that's going to happen in areas where people are passionate about, right? And everyone's going to have a handful of passions where they're going to want to kill some time and check in and learn about. For me, it might be do-it-yourself and backpacking and these sorts of things, right? So those tend to be high-margin things. So I actually think what we'll see, if just in terms of prognosticating about where this stuff's going to go, I think the more interesting things around social commerce are going to air in those pockets like boutiques, which are built around people's passions.
So there's a couple of sites that come to mind. Daily Grommet, if you're not familiar. Basically, they curate and find... It's a real lifestyle-driven site, and they curate and find the coolest products around the world that you've never heard of, and feature them and do video, and then they sell them from the site. And then a little more higher-end one is called Aha Life, really gorgeous curated stuff. These are all like... If you think about it, you know, as Craig was saying, is like around this lifestyle-driven, brand taste-driven, a lot of sites are becoming successful because they appeal to, you know, retro vintage culture, or they, you know, the hipster lifestyle culture, that sort of thing.
Hi, I'm Rob Wolf from Microsoft. A lot of the examples you gave were really helpful in terms of companies doing it well, empowering their customers, but a lot of them were commerce-related companies, companies that sell directly to their customers. A company like ours, we're more of a manufacturer. We sell through partners, whether it's PC makers or mobile operators. And I'm just curious to know if you have any examples of companies that are manufacturers that are doing a good job of creating an environment where things can be socially shared well, and then the manufacturer kind of gets out of the way. So, you know, companies that make products that you think lend themselves to sharing and storytelling and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I'm trying. Because I would say, for example, would it count if I said something like Bare Essentials, or did I just miss the plot? Because on a beauty side, I'd say that's a high. I mean, that's what they make, right? They make that stuff.
You're talking about B2B enterprise.
No, I'm talking about consumer stuff. But I'm talking about, say, an electronics manufacturer. You're talking about laptops,
like Dell before. Or somebody like that.
So Dell does that, and they sell direct. But I'm thinking, you know, maybe a Sony or somebody else that sells a product that is sold at retail environments. They sell through they sell to retailers, they sell through a QVC or something. Who's doing a good job of sort of creating the assets for people to share socially?
You know what? Here's a really interesting one. It's pretty new and upcoming, and it's blowing up. It's Warby Parker. Do you guys know Warby Parker? The glasses. Yeah, they have. They call themselves Warby Parker. Optical glasses. You think pretty boring. They make, you know, I think 10 different styles of glasses, and they have this really cool thing. It's you buy one, and then somebody who can't afford glasses gets one. Now, their glasses, their price point is also very reasonable, too. I think it's $100 for the frames, and then you pay for your prescription or whatever. $99, yeah. But then they have the side thing where somebody who can't afford glasses gets a pair of glasses. So they're leveraging social in the social good sort of way, where you can feel good and you have fashionable glasses. It's not just sort of a pair of, you know, they're very, very focused on design.
But to just take your idea and riff on it a little bit, I mean, one of the things that the art of marketing through social is the art of marketing through your customers, right? So the places that it's going to be good are where you've got lots of CRM, right? Because it really is like CRM 2.0, right? And the trick is, like, you know, in a classic world with CRM, you personalize the experience based on who that person is because you know who they are. I mean, this next generation is you personalize the experience not just in who they are, but what people around them and who they're connected to like, right? It's an entirely different frame. And what I would just say is, you know, the people that are going to adopt this stuff first are already the people that have already invested in the CRM stuff. So if you're not in that kind of mode, it's a tough transition.
So in this split between being a consumer and being a marketer, I look at it two ways. As a consumer, I trust word of mouth historically, and I trust Amazon's algorithms that are aggregates of people like me, or Netflix algorithms that are aggregate of people. And I wonder why there's nothing in the social space where my friend web is obviously people like me. It's people who actually I know, and I don't trust anything that If ever somebody posts a, I just liked this on this site, I assume quid pro quo. And I assume that there's not a trusted, they're really enthusiastic about it. I can tell the difference between the genuine enthusiasm and paid for. So I guess, is there some sort of tool to sort of bridge between real word of mouth from real friends and sort of aggregate consumer data that lives on social? It seems like there should be.
That's the world that's going to emerge, right?
Yeah, but I would say that tool is called human intuition. Mm. We don't need a computer for that. You already can recognize
it's
that.
It's not going to be voluntary. People aren't going to say, hey, I went to Trader Joe's and bought this bag of chips and I really liked it.
I'd say that.
Why wouldn't they? I mean, people are doing that all the time on Twitter and Instagram, and those data exist. They're just sort of in a kind of data diaspora.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I love Trader Joe's. I tweet every time I Instagram everything in their store.
I think you share stuff. You don't share that you buy a potato chip. You share stuff that either
literally
reflects who
chips.
You are as a person. Maybe potato chips reflects who you are as a person. But, you know, really is kind of displaying that, or you want to help a friend out. I mean, there's motivations on why people share, and they don't just share to share, right? I would say, though, that one of the challenges with some of this, the historic way of doing this has been reviews, right? Or, you know, and that seems like it's collapsing under its own weight, right? Because you end up having so many reviews. I mean, what this is all about is context, right? You understand the perspective of the person that's giving you the advice, right? Because you're connected to them in some ways, or the way they're answering the question. And that seems to be a missing ingredient. We have tons of information, but we have no context.
Yeah, not to mention, like, I heard this stat before that, you know, it was, I don't know, the average rating, you know, on a five-star rating across the states, I think it was like 4.3 or 5 or something like that. And that just doesn't make sense to me. So I'm kind of with you on that whole thing. For that reason, you know, big question. You go on Amazon, you're not quite sure, you know?
Well, what people have tried to do, and this gets back to the friends isn't enough argument, they try to overlay the notion of friends on it. But friends is too small of a circle, right? So one of the challenges, again, back to why this isn't taking off, is that what we deal with on Facebook in particular is there's lots of sharing around lightweight things like what song I'm listening to on Spotify, right? So massive amounts of volume of sharing, and a lot of what they're working on is how to slice that down to smaller and smaller groups. well, commerce actually has an opposite problem. I need a wider signal, right? I'm trying to figure out what digital telescope to buy or what to get boots. I need to reach more people, right? And that's kind of not the design center for them. And the trick, it again, comes down to friends aren't enough. How do you start to build interest graphs around people that are experts or what Pinterest is doing? Or that's where the action's really happening.
Yeah, verified, validated, impartial.
Or some context, right, that's in some way social. Please.
So Yelp is accused of hijacking businesses by, you know, trying to say, hey, to advertise on Yelp to get your rankings up, and then people are accusing Yelp of putting on negative reviews and hiding the positive reviews, and so that's kind of a concern, too, when you think about real people reviews. There's still some room for some manipulation.
Right, because you don't know who they are, right? But the trick is, it's exactly the issue, which is in Yelp, you know, if every business has a 4.5 review and there's 60 reviews, which I'm not going to read the 60 reviews, it gets destroyed under its own weight,
yeah,
right? And what I really want to know is what people like me think, right? That's the simple question, and how do we answer that question? And it's pretty hard to do right now.
Yeah, I guess a little bit related to his point, but I mean, how do you think social commerce is going to affect marketing spending going to the social networking platforms like Facebook and Twitter? That they obviously have an interest in constantly tweaking their advertising or marketing, you know, go-to-market strategies, and obviously I would think social, you know, social commerce would be one driver of that. But do you see any challenges for those guys in terms of actually, you know, convincing people to spend on their platform? And how much do you think that people are spending on their platform now to assist in their social commerce efforts?
Marketers, you mean?
Yeah.
Marketers, right?
So advertising on social platforms.
Yeah, I mean, you know, buying sponsored stories, buying display ads, buying what else they're doing, buying promoted trends.
You know,
I mean,
our trend line's
that's their
going
business
down.
Model.
Our trend line's going kind of down on that. I mean, we definitely have a budget and we spend against it, but as the base has grown, the whole point is we're depending more on folks to do that for us. I mean, really, if we're doing our jobs right. So for us, like in the beginning, we had to build our fan base, I still call it that, and make sure that we engage them and keep growing it. So once that's happened, I predict that at least as it relates to spending on ads the way we normally have, that'll go down. But the idea of boosting sort of sponsored stories and things like that, that's still definitely on the table, I think, because those are good.
I would say social commerce or social marketing is where SEO and SEM were about 12 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It's a black art. People kind of don't know what they're doing. It's hard to measure, right?
This whole conference is
And, you know, we've spent, what, a decade obsessed about it, right? And people are good at it now. And it's, you know, I would expect to see a similar sort of path happen. People will figure this stuff out.
Yeah, it's kind of arrived. I mean, it's in everybody's budget line, and I think more and more money is being spent on, you know, on social commerce. But, you know, I like that Peter talked about his evolution, that you get to a point, though, that you're no longer buying your fans. Now you're actually organically acquiring them, and that's where SEM, SEO went as well. It used to be a bit about paid search, and then people got smarter and smarter with how they were organically building.
So I think that you know, what's interesting is that there's a role for promoted tweets and for Facebook ads for sure in terms of building awareness. But, you know, the P&G example of them laying off 1,600 people and, you know, quote-unquote figuring out that it doesn't cost anything to advertise on Facebook, you know, or you can use Facebook effectively without paying money to Facebook, is sort of representative of where a lot of the activity is. It's on the organic side, and the money is being spent on personnel and in-house and agencies and services and not necessarily on advertising per se. You get the last question.
All right. Earlier you guys were focusing a lot on how user feedback and information can equip kind of the buying process and working with merchants. So I'm curious what other sorts of user generated data or feedback is also useful in this concept of social commerce outside of strictly kind of the buying process. Does that make sense?
Would you be also, by implication, referring to customer service or the post-purchase kind of treatment
right.
of customers?
Yeah.
Okay, that's important because we didn't talk about that at all, and that's a big deal.
And I would also say, too, there's some other areas in user-generated content that, you know, we haven't covered here that are really helpful. So in the decision-making process, what site? I was on a site the other day, and they had actually users who had bought shoes or the jackets or dresses were actually posting videos like sort of, this is how it fits and this is how I love it. And I don't know how it was working or how it was actually, if it was creating more customer feeling of trust around the purchase, but I thought it was a really smart idea because it wasn't a video that was produced by the company itself. It was a video produced by the customers.
I guess I'd say for us, we don't think of the social stuff as API calls to Facebook, right? We think of, if you're really in this business, you need to think of it as build your own graph, right? You need to think about what your users are doing, who they are, how they're relating, and how do you actually allow them to kind of organize. Like, that's just, Facebook's the starting point, right? And let's use Pinterest as an example. Yes, you get to invite your friends, but then as using the product, you're building up your own circles, right? Your own boards. And that is kind of, I think, the level of effort that people need to have. Because, again, thinking of it as a CRM kind of thing is probably a better analogy than kind of this thing in the cloud that you just touch, right? And it takes a lot of effort. It's a lot of hard work. We've invested massive amounts of time in it, but it pays off.
Okay, so as you said, we didn't get to everything, but I think we've covered a lot of ground. The customer service is a very rich area of discussion. We sort of only obliquely talked about that. In the last 4 minutes, let's say, why don't we sort of do some more formal prognostication? So we're doing the same panel 2 years from now. What are the success stories look like? How would you describe the successful examples of, quote, social commerce? 2 years.
Okay. Various different brands, various different retailers are working together, exchanging, data, standardizing product page markups and catalogs so that CRM is the past and something called VRM, vendor relationship management, where the customer drives the relationships and not the brands driving relationships, is dominant.
For me, 2 years from now, I don't think there'll be a quote-unquote social conference, and hopefully that word will go away. I think it's really kind of caused a lot of confusion for people, including myself. I see the, at least from our perspective, getting more and more to kind of what you were saying, and getting into a borderless state where it's more like Miracle on 34th Street, and we use our brands and our reason for being, which is again not about the products, as a conduit to be super helpful. And usually when I say that, people are like, "That's so JV, it's 101." But honest to God, this stuff is just like that. It's that simple. And that's what I see, that this whole discussion becomes so ubiquitous that it's part of our everyday lives, like email, and we just don't think so deeply about it anymore.
2 years from now, I think we'll be in the golden age of boutiques, right? There'll be tons of little stores with really cool, interesting things that we're actually going to not just go online to buy stuff, we're going to go out there to just experience and find out about cool things, and it's going to be a lot more fun. I also think that probably in a year, we'll have the UX metaphor of social discovery. Stuff like biosphere will be kind of much more ingrained in our consciousness. We're going to be inclined to kind of first ask people we trust rather than take on this burden of researching on our own. I think that will be much more commonplace.
Okay, in the 2 minutes we have left, what burning thing did you not get a chance to say that you want to say? Or any final remarks that you want to make?
Well, that was sort of, that's why I said it in the last question, because I thought I wouldn't have a chance to save on the CRM, turning the airman. Customer empowerment. I mean, this really, in social commerce, to me, the ultimate goal and the ultimate positive outcome will be customers truly are driving their experience. They own their shopping history data. You can take your taste metrics with you wherever you go. You're not having to sign in everywhere, but it's not because it's through some sort of Facebook credits, but it's because you have a secure like credit passport attached to you. That for me, where the customer is at the center is I think really where social commerce should and I hope will go.
For us, I think, the biggest thing for social is it's fundamentally shifted our corporate culture, I should say. And we are going to, bit by bit, march our way to what we've sort of, what I've sort of termed as 17,000 points of light, which just means that every single person in our company has some personal or professional life experience that they can share to be helpful. And I give an example. You know, we see a lot of video bloggers out there in the beauty space, chatting a lot, trying to demonstrate cosmetic color on skin, having a hard time. So why can't our head of lighting go over there and say, throw a light up in the air, put it at a 25-degree angle, voila, you'll be able to demonstrate that better. So I see 2 years from now, that's where we'll be.
Okay, great. And 140 characters, you get the last word.
Yeah, so I would answer the question, why is it not taking off like Farmville? One, because it's really different. And I think people underappreciated how different social commerce was. And second, I would say it's going to happen because shopping has always been social. It just hasn't been social online, right? And now that the web's become social, it's kind of the next big thing, right? And that's
okay, this is the part of the program where everybody claps for the great job the panelists have done.
Thank you for coming. And the audience.